they're starting to move around. What Sitka typically sees as we get closer and closer having the herring show up, and then the spawn, we get a number of bears that will come down to the beach and pick up the roe. That's pretty typical for Sitka. Last year's first bear calls were out towards Stargavin, and that's what the bears were doing exactly, and then then got actually run into the neighborhoods by people. So that's a real typical pattern. And then what we often see is that as things green up, skunk cabbage in particular, it starts really popping out, then the bears will hit that pretty hard and start to work their way back up. So we get a, we may get a small influx of bears early on, usually not in a concentrated way in any way, shape, or form. We may get a sow that shows up with cubs at Stargavin. This year we may have a sow show up in the lower Indian River that we believe she wintered someplace close in the lower end. So, but in the last 2 years, we've essentially taken 19 bears out of our population around town. And if I were to make a guess right now, I would expect we'd have fewer bears in town this year just because of that.
In general, do boars emerge from the den earlier than sows and cubs? How's that work?
Typically, the boars do emerge earlier. There are some exceptions. If you get bears, younger bears, not very far up on the alpha scale, they're down low. They've denned down low and survived the winter. It'll warm up first, and they'll come out looking for food. They may not have the fat reserves as the bigger bears, and so they'll be up lean and hungry and moving around.
I know you've found some dens very high up in the alpine. Do those bears stay denned up longer in alpine areas?
It seems like the alpha bears, both the females and the boars, pick the best sites that they find are usually north-facing. What triggers the hormone that puts them into hibernation or their semi-hibernation is light. Anybody who's worked with bears for a while will tell you on a nice warm day, bears often get up and move out of their dens, stretch their legs, and then go back in and lay down. So they're not really true hibernators. They just have long periods where they really don't take in any nourishment, and they don't excrete any waste.
These bears that we're likely to see, they're interested in the herring roe. They're interested in the green skunk cabbage. What are your thoughts on trail safety and taking walks this time of year?
Just because it's early, you shouldn't be forgetting about the possibility of running into a bear out there. And in addition, you're firing up your grills for the first time and grilling that first king salmon. You want to remember to clean up after yourself. You want to remember to put away your bird feeders. Anything that, if you do get a bear that's coming down and poking around, he's going to be hungry, and he's going to be looking for food, and he's going to take advantage of almost anything that's out there. So that's one of the difficulties we have, not just in Sitka, but a lot of places that the bears go in, and essentially the bulk of them do hibernate or out of sight, out of sound for essentially late October, November on until this time of year. So people forget and get careless about their garbage. It's like, oh, we don't have to worry about it. The bears aren't around. But we have had a bear out in Sitka every single month of the year if you go back through the records. So it's not uncommon to have a bear show up. So people also, walking the trails is a good example. People want to stretch their dog's legs too, and they kick them off the leash. And if you run into a bear and he's hungry, he's liable to follow the dog back. You want to be aware of your surroundings. If you've got fresh bear poop on the trail, you should be paying attention. And that's the kind of thing you want to. It's always safer to have a couple people, and you want to do that. And you should, if you're out there walking early morning, late evenings, you should have some type of personal protection. I don't care really whether it's bear pepper or a whistle or your cell phone to let somebody know where you are, but you should have something with you.
All right. Another thing I look for, and maybe it's just me, but I've been out on the trail, and I haven't necessarily seen a bear scat per se, but I have seen freshly dug up skunk cabbage roots, like, and wet sopping mud on the trail, and I kind of go into my bear in the area protocol. Is that common?
That's very common. And also, this time of year, you have the deer down digging out the skunk cabbage, too. It's just always good in this country to be aware that you could run into a bear. You should not be surprised if you run into a bear. And so you want to be mentally prepared, and you also don't want to be doing something foolish, like trying to approach the bear to get pictures with your cell phone camera. And that's really not advisable, and we see so many people do that, and it's really a testament to how tolerant the bears are. But that said, you don't want to push that too far either. Grab your camera. It is. It seems to be a real... Everybody's got, or it seems like everybody has a cell phone camera now, and that's the first thing they pull out, and then they run or yell or scream. Or...
Phil, you mentioned that we've had 19 bears removed from Sitka over the past couple of years, cubs, sows, I guess, predominantly. Are the bears that come into Sitka later on in the summer these bears that we typically associate as being attracted into Sitka by the garbage? Is this a new population every year, or are these bears that we have educated in the past?
They are. Just for instance, some of the teeth that were taken from the sows that were killed in the last 2 years, they were 15-year-old bears. They've been around. This was probably they grew up with a sow and inherited part of her home range, and that included part of Sitka. And they distribute themselves based on a pecking order. The sows with cubs have a pecking order, and then the boars come in and they have their own pecking order. Sows are pretty protective of their cubs, and they'll move to avoid the boars. Way back when Jim Farrell was here, and he's also got a lot of bear experience and behavior understanding behind him, is that he told me that he always felt that there were about 7 adult bears on the Sitka's home front range. And those bears distribute themselves along that. They have individual den sites. They move around and interact with one another, but they also come down and interact with people. And I've always felt that there's an advantage if you look at the number of people and the number of instances where they've had bears in their yards, had an encounter where a bear has approached them with a dog or their children, and the people have done kind of foolish things trying to get pictures and things like that. The bears have been relatively tolerant to the point that a couple of years ago, when we had some of our most serious encounters in the most recent years, where a person was swatted off a bike and another one was grabbed, they weren't badly hurt, and they could have been very easily. Not to say it wasn't a traumatic experience for them, but if you look across the board for Alaska, there's an indication if you run into a bear in the northern latitudes further here, where they're not as comfortable with people, the damage is often a lot worse. So to me, there's some logic to keeping those older bears around that are know the drill, understand what people are, and are pretty tolerant like that.
The distribution of bears has been pretty consistent over the years, and it's surprising to look at the map that you're looking at areas mainly around downtown, sort of the Halibut Point Road area to basically the Sheldon Jackson campus.
That's correct.
This is kind of... I would have expected that would have been farther out, Sawmill Creek Road. You do have an area in Jamestown Bay that gets high frequency, but is there an explanation for why bears concentrate in certain parts of Sitka?
Well, the green area that you're looking on the map is essentially the Indian River Valley, and as it breaks out towards the bottom there, Jamestown Bay, the influence there of the fish stream, the timber, the easy access. It's a big U-shaped valley, plus the upper end of Indian River. If you go to the very upper end of that, it hits a ridge, a back wall, and that drops right over into Callahan. And for a bear, it's nothing to make that loop, especially the boars. The boars that come through. The upper end of the area that you're looking at there is essentially got a perimeter trail of the cross trail. So it's easy for a bear over in HPR say, Cascade Creek, what we typically see is they may be up in the Stargaven Valley. They cross over the ridge and they into the Granite Creek Pit area up No Name Creek. Then they come in through the fork there of Granite Creek, come in above the pit. They hit the Benchland Road and the Harbor Mountain Road, come right around onto that, onto the Benchland Road, and turn the corner of Cascade Street. At Cascade Street, they go up through the Muskeg and the backside. They hit the now the new portion of the cross trail, and it used to be the water line. So they've been using it for a long time, and you've got Gavin Subdivision there. And we've had problems there quite a bit, plus on Edgecombe, too. We occasionally have bears that step out off of Cascade Creek and walk down the middle of Edgecombe. So you've got what you typically find is the bears that are accessing Sitka, they like to hang pretty close to the timber and to areas where they can escape. That's why we don't see them too many times downtown. And the bears that usually get caught downtown are in a big hurry to get out. And so even though that behind Blatchley Middle School, we've got a compost area we've had some gardens in there, big community gardens, we don't see a whole lot of emphasis there because they're essentially blocked with easy access to Swan Lake. So there are areas in Sitka that are just not naturally frequented by bears simply because it puts them too far away from their escape route.
They're coming down the kind of the Indian River corridor and fanning out as best they can in such a way that allows them to get back up into the woods easily.
Indian River itself, you know, even though the fish are a big attractant, if you look at the frequency intervals, it's typically July and August when the fish are really in there and the latter part of July. And how that works is a little bit different, too, than some people believe is When fish move up from saltwater or freshwater, they don't all come at once. And so the first fish up are there for the alpha bears, and the alpha bears aren't going to allow the other bears in there, so they fan out. They fan out into the neighborhoods, and they wait till the big bears have had their fill, and then they move in, and they jockey around between themselves. So there's always this alpha level going on, and it pushes the bears out, squeezes them out sometimes to the side, out through Totem Park. Sometimes they're over towards Sheldon Jackson, but they're in the vicinity so they can make a run to go get a fish. So as the fish continue to move further up Indian River, then it allows the bears to move them, space themselves. And we know from research, too, that the boars fish streams differently than the sows, and sows with cubs fish it differently than unaccompanied sows. And so their approach is different, and they need some room to move around. So there's a... Yeah, there's a lot of things. It's really difficult to pinpoint one particular thing that brings them in here, but the topography does play a big role in this.
Do bears defend their territory if it's a berry patch, not just a stream?
Sure, absolutely. We saw that when we had the woman slapped off the bike. We had a situation where the bear had cubs, but the cubs had crossed in front of her into a berry patch, and she essentially was using that berry patch pretty routinely. We didn't have another bear in the immediate vicinity because a lot of times, even though people associate more injury from boars to sows and cubs, sows will kill other sows' cubs, and it happens. And so they steer clear of one another. They're not real social with their cubs. Not to say that you don't see some instances when sows with multiple cubs are close to one another.
Have you noticed any of these behaviors coming into play surrounding Sitka's garbage? Have you noticed any sort of territorial behavior around garbage, or is garbage more of a catch-as-catch-can kind of thing?
I think for Sitka, it's more as a catch-as-catch-can situation. If you look at the bears that are typically reported in town, they're sows, cubs, and young juveniles, particularly males, have been kicked away. And those males, if you look at the bears that we've actually had to go in and kill, the Merrill Street bear that took a dog and cashed it off the back of a porch, the one a few years ago, the one after Burgess Bowder's dog up on the cross trail was a male. They get into the mix. They don't have really the same status to push the sows and cubs around as a big boar. So they're kind of odd man out. So they're trying to squeeze in and figure out a way to make a living. Plus, the male bears don't inherit a portion of their mother's home range. So when they're kicked out from the mom, they're essentially on their own. And it can be a pretty tough world for them out there.
All right. What about the pilot project on the Indian River to centralize garbage? I think we sort of debriefed a little bit with Public Works about it, but what was your impression as a biologist of it?
Well, from the can test, one of the weaknesses that we've had here in town is that I believe there's close to 3,500 individual cans out there, the tipper cart, for residents. And distributed across the landscape we have, that's a lot of opportunities for bears. And the biggest portion of that was that the cans aren't inherently bear-resistant. Yeah, they weren't designed to be bear-resistant. So, you know, attempts to lock down the lids was good to control incidental garbage pulled out by ravens and that, but you get a bear that came along if there was an incentive to get into it. And bears, essentially, in my opinion, live for two things, sex and food. And that's what drives them. And if they have a chance to come in and grab a meal from a can, they're going to do it. Especially one that they can tip over, the lid flies open, it dumps the stuff on the ground, they grab what they want and they run. We get very few bears that stay in and work the garbage over. They paw through it, grab something, and go. And it's a kind of a lessens the risk for them to be approached while they're busy working on food by another bear. You know, you've got that situation that we didn't have a can to start with. The city looked at replacing individual cans, and it's pretty expensive. We also looked at from the standpoint that not one shoe is going to fit everything here in town, and maybe that's the way we should look at it, where instead of just going with the individual cans, the Canmore experiment in British Columbia, where they centralized the garbage, was they had the individual cans and still had problems with it because they had a percentage of the human population that wouldn't take care of their garbage. And you can do enforcement, there's no question about it, and you can go after those people, but when you give a bear an opportunity of 3,500 cans versus, say, maybe 40 cans, one, it makes it easier to get to the bears and respond to a call to haze the bear because they're pretty smart. They dance around but through the neighborhoods, and by the time you get the call and go after the bear, he's moved. And so you end up chasing him across Sitka through the night at the night. So there was that concern. The bigger concern was the fact, could we make the 300-gallon cans bear-resistant? And that's what the test was out there to do that. Indian River, it has the highest frequency, consistently the highest frequency of bears. It's not so much the resident neighborhood there. It's the geographical location of the river. But it brings those bears into that neighborhood, and there's about 100 cans there. So whenever you get a call, it's the same situation. Trying to locate a bear within one of those 100 cans that is running around and checking is really tough to go after in a short period of time. The bears are smart. As soon as you show up, they seem to sense that you're after them and they leave. So,
yeah, it's like we're kind of laying a prize in front of the bear on his natural corridor. Anyway, putting the neighborhood there and having all the opportunity for garbage. So I can see why, you know, even if a bear doesn't have garbage on its mind, it might be tempted to take a look at somebody's garbage.
All the bears that I've chased around here in the last dozen years or so have been, you know, when you push them away from the garbage, the first thing they do is go back into looking for Devil's Club. They go find some fish, you know, in the streams. They go eat the berries. And we've actually watched them go down the street, and they'll almost secondhandly push over a can to see if there's anything in it, and then just go to the next can. So, there's some residual smell to it that's really tough to get rid of, and they've got a natural curiosity. And, you know, if they knock it over and something good comes out, they pick at it, and away they go. You don't see them spend a whole lot of time tearing up the cans. You don't see a lot of damage in town where they go up on a porch and rip out windows and doors and stuff like that, unless you have a dog inside that's something like that. We don't see that type of behavior. We see more of the hit and run on the cans that are not secured and easy to get to, and dogs can tip them over and ravens can pull out stuff, and you get a lot of incidental garbage around.
Are you confident in the hazing techniques that you guys use? I mean, have you hazed a bear and then never seen it again, or is garbage just too powerful an attractant?
Hazing techniques have been around for a long time, and the technology really hasn't changed too much in the last 40 years. What has changed just recently is the development of the animal taser, and we have tried it over the last 2 years at the dump in Yakutat with very habituated bears, and then last season at Port Armstrong and Little Port Walter, where you have a fish hatchery, so you have a natural incentive of the bears to come in there. And you also have crews that are very dedicated to keeping bears out of the work area, and so they're used to working with bears in close quarters, and yet you still don't want to have bears walking up behind you while you're doing your job. So we have tried the animal taser. We had very good luck with it. It's still, a lot of it's in a research development type thing, but it's been the only device we found so far that we've been able to hit a sow and she's left her cubs. You remember a couple years ago when we had the sow with four here, that sow was hazed more than 50 times that we're aware of with rubber bullets. And four of those eventually killed her inside of her. And that's the problem with that. It's one, you're chasing a bear around in a residential neighborhood with, even though they're less lethal rounds, they can break windows, they can hurt people, they ricochet easily. You're running bears, trying to get them back out of an area, and you have a lot of people standing around. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. Darting is a real hazard too, because of the darts. Even though they're not high speed, they can do damage. And then if you lose one in a residential neighborhood, it's going to be a couple of days before the drug is no good. So, you know, you put all of that together, and you put almost 9,000 people and 10 bears running around. The potential for bad things to happen is good. So that's kind of the point that we've taken on that, is as long as there's a bear on Baranoff Island, it's going to be probably around Sitka. It's just a perfect location for them. It's good aspect for denning. It's got den sites close by. It's got herring that come in the spring that add supplement to the, you know, the foods that they're looking for vegetation like skunk cabbage. It's got the right mix. And so it's up to us to try to figure out how we can live here and minimize the risk from them. And it's not so much, you know, I hear this from, well, we're putting more emphasis on saving the bears than protecting children. And that's ridiculous. That's not true whatsoever. What we're doing, if you look at some of the behavior that people do towards the bear, endangering themselves and endangering others, it's no different than them going out there, leaving food available through negligence or sometimes feeding them carcasses of fish so they can take pictures. They bring a bear in and habituate it, get it used to coming in for food, and your neighbor, who's doing everything right, is trying to keep their stuff clean. And he may be the one that the bear runs into in the night. There's got to be some common sense that prevails, and trying to come up with a fix with the cans is difficult when you've grown up now. A lot of people have grown up here with having the tipper carts, and it's convenient outside your door. Some people do a great job, but if you have 3,500 cans and just 10% of those are getting hit by the bears, you've got the bears in town.